Hello, listeners. Thanks for joining us today. This is our fun little mental health podcast in Missouri called Show Me State of Mind. We take a little tour of some recent history of things going on in our world, and specifically in the space of mental health. And so we're really appreciative that you joined us today here at Show Me State of Mind. All right. Well, again, welcome to the pod, as they say in the industry, the pod. Really excited about today's episode. With us today is someone is really kind of, I maybe could say like a hidden gem, but really the engine to the DBH system that really for a lot of folks don't really appreciate just how much and how important it is to our system. This guest started working for DMH at like age 16 and is now retiring at like the age of 40. But in all seriousness, this is someone who is absolutely critical to our system of care. And it is absolutely true, and I used to say this all the time back in the previous role I had, that it takes everyone to make a system of care work. And fiscal folks are so critical to that mission. No money, no mission, as we like to say it. So with us today is our friend, a champion of behavioral health services in Missouri, someone who led our fiscal survival through COVID and post-COVID. This is the one and only Vicki Schollmeyer, Deputy Director of Admin for the Division of Behavioral Health. Thank you for joining us, Vicki Schollmeyer.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. And I should introduce, for the first time ever, I have someone joining who's kind of like a guest co-host. Since we're talking fiscal stuff, I thought it might be cool to get some insight and some good back and forth repartee, as they say, with someone who works with Vicki, possibly, well, almost certainly more than I even do. And that's the council's very own Chelsea Hughes. So Chelsea, thanks for joining us on the pod today.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had some fun, haven't we, Vicki?
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this is great. Well, fun day for sure to spend with two of my favorite people. So for real, Vicki, I joked earlier, but you maybe didn't start at age 16 with the state, but I think it wasn't always with DMH when you started your career with the state of Missouri, right? Was it always DMH, or I thought I remember you started maybe somewhere else?
So I did have a little part-time stint with revenue, and it was kind of one of the job things. But my full-time venture has always been with DMH.
Okay. You had a little part-time intro to the working world, but then when you got a full-time job, it was with the Department of Mental Health. So did you always start in the budget unit under Patty Henry, or did you start somewhere else?
No, so I've done full circle. I came from the private sector, one of the local banks, so always had a fiscal interest per se. But no, I started as an accountant for the Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse, which I don't know if that's been introduced over the course of these podcasts, but we are now the Division of Behavioral Health. We used to be the Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse and the Division of Comprehensive Services. So I started under Alcohol and Drug Abuse, then went to administration and accounts payable, and then went to budget under Patty Henry. So yeah, now I'm back in DBH. So yes, full circle.
Oh man. Well, I'd love to ultimately get Patty on someday, but you started with under Patty, who's a great friend and someone who went from a long career in mental health, but under admin and budget, she worked a long time there and brought up a lot of folks who have gone on to really work all over the place. There's some folks, if I remember, over in the House, and there's some people throughout state government that kind of started under Patty. She was something else, and really, probably really good to get trained under her.
It was fantastic. She is one, a fabulous person, and she always took the time, because I am one with many questions still to this day after all these years at the state. I still have many questions because there's so much to learn, but she was just a workhorse, and she wanted to be sure she had an answer whenever the question may arise. One of her famous things that she said that I still quote to this day, do not put off for tomorrow what you can get done today.
Really awesome Patty stories. But my favorite, I worked in the Senate when, and that's where I really, when I got the Department of Mental Health budget when I was at the Senate, it was kind of really fun because I got to learn a lot and but interact with Patty, and she was so good at explaining things. And at that time, we had he became budget chair and a good friend of mental health, but Senator Gross was a relatively new senator, and he had a staff person named Jeannie who was combing through line items of the budget. And if like supplies at Fulton State Hospital were budgeted at $50,000 and they only came in at $30,000 spending, he wondered, why can't we cut $20,000? Because it looks like there's a lapse in that supply line. And so I will never forget when mental health, because, you know, you guys were watching. She usually would have people listening or not listening then, watching then. So got wind of this. And she spent, I want you to tell me how she did this. But if I remember, she had little notes throughout the entire budget. And every time, no matter who was testifying, if Gross asked, why are supplies not being spent by $15,000, $20,000? She knew that money was transferred from there up to here to pay these bills. And if you can imagine that, I mean, there are three budget books that are like 4 inches tall each with literally hundreds and hundreds of pages. And she found all those and answered every single question he had. And after it, I don't know if you knew this, but Gross went up to her and was like, that was amazing. Nobody can do that. And it just left such an impression on the team. But I imagine you were part of that group that was working through that crap.
I think that was a year or two before I started in the budget unit. But yeah.
Oh, was it really?
I'm circulating around, ensuring that all of that information was available to be discussed. Patty was definitely one that didn't like to say, I'm going to get back to you.
Yeah.
She wanted to make sure that Department of Mental Health was very well represented. And the fact that we can say what's going on in our budget, she wanted to make sure that was her role and that she did it. And I will tip my hat to her now for sure, because I will tell you that sometimes I struggle to keep up with behavioral health budget, let alone the entire department. So
yeah.
She had a phenomenal seat. She had a bunch of fabulous staff that worked with her, that worked with the divisions, because the budget staff have to work with divisions to know that level of detail that goes on. But
That was wild. And I know you mentioned, as we were getting ready for the podcast, kind of preparing for the budget, and Patty, that I learned in my role at the Senate, but even now, like over preparing for things, like my budget notes and markup sheets had literally cut out things and taped things. And because, you kind of learn from people like Patty that, hey, you got to be prepared. And so when you testify, it's always, I kind of hear that in your voice, because we tend to over prepare for those testimonies, don't we? Because it's just, you don't want to be, caught off guard or not have anything. Yeah.
And that's awesome. A fine line to try to explain to the staff who put so much effort and, into preparing the document to prep me on, and when I go through the questions I may have. So they do put in a lot of work and to ensure they know it's not in vain, because it does educate me, it educates Nora, it educates a lot of us to go through that technical detail to be prepared for what may be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this is the fun part of where Vicki and I, we knew each other a little bit previously, but we did. Then ultimately, some guy from the Senate came over and took over as DMH budget director, and everything went downhill quickly from there. And that was when I moved to the Department of Mental Health and Patty had moved up in the organization. And so then I became Vicki Schollmeyer's boss for a time. And it was kind of, we had a good group and we had a lot of fun. But what I always like to figure, we laughed about this, but like, you guys didn't spend as much time working after hours. Like, all that went away and we were like, why are we not working a lot? And we kind of never could figure it out. Like, something happened. I don't understand it, but.
Yeah. And I'm not going to complain, our overtime definitely didn't decrease whenever you came on. I think one day you and I actually went through a couple of documents and we're like, okay, here's one that we update. And he's like, and he went, I asked for that like 3 years ago as a Senate analyst. I don't need that anymore. But that was Patty's, you know, mentality.
Yeah.
What if you ask for it? So it's a document. And we did keep some of those documents as historical references. So some of them did stay and are put to use, and we referenced them even in the vision. But yeah, it was just that being prepared for the what if.
Yeah, overtime went way down under McGinty, and we never quite understood why. But we did get a lot of work done. And I've got a lot of Vicky stories. We had a lot of funny. Our group was really fun and dynamic, and we had good times. We were a small little team. I think there were four of us. But
yep.
There was one year, I think you had moved up to kind of my right-hand person. You're the senior person there, and we were working magic, and it wasn't me, it was you. You got the entire, if I recall, the entire Department of Mental Health's budget down to like $10 of lapsed general revenue. And yeah. I wish we could count the number of appropriations and the number of transfers and flexes and different approvals you had to go through to get that down to $10. But if you imagine $1 billion-plus budget and lapsing $10 of general revenue, that's just dumb. I don't know how you ended up doing that.
Well, again, I'm probably going to have to tell you a Patty reference, because that was just what she drilled into us to ensure that general revenue, because when you do have multiple funding sources, general revenue per se is one time. You only have it for that fiscal year. It's not a guarantee for future years. And so you have different timelines if you have federal discretionary funding. So it is a game to try to figure out what you can spend by when. And yeah, having that GR down to zero, my staff will probably tell you they're traumatized by it, because we'll have a facility and they're like, okay, you got 74 cents, you can split an invoice. And they automatically, so Vicky's going to be going, well, you need to spend that money. So I still do that to this day. And if anybody lapses, I think it sends me in a bad mood going, you knew that was there. But I mean,
yeah. These are like, say, state facilities that have supply, GR, expense and equipment left. You know they're sitting on invoices. You're like, why would you not split this invoice, get this, you know, $20, $500 spent this fiscal year? We don't have it for next year. Let's get it spent. Well, it's not, as a taxpayer, you need to understand it's not out there just spending money on anything. This is on necessary supplies and different things. It's just a matter of getting people motivated to understand that this is money that doesn't come back. So you need to make sure and get it expended, and trying to train people on that. When there's some folks out in a facility or whatever, they're just like, I don't understand. Why are we working so hard on this? But it does matter. And like you said, if you know, if I'm a representative or senator and you're lapsing money, that's where you look at the budget. That just is what it is, because you don't need it. So it is important. Then at some point, right, then you get out of there. You move over to the division. I'm trying to think. I think that happened
right after
I left or something. Then you kind of took off.
Yep. I had a brief stint within the Division of Developmental Disabilities, again in fiscal. My world's always been in fiscal. And then I moved to the Division of Behavioral Health. Again, the two divisions merged in February 2012, probably somewhere in there. So yeah, I've been within the division for a good 13 years now.
Wow. That's amazing. And I forgot, how did we let you get away to DD? That surely didn't last that long. That was dumb of us.
I think it was just, well, for me, one, I wanted, you know, you hit a point where you think you know everything that there is. And so I thought I knew everything that I was going to know within the budget. So it was time for me to learn. I'm always one that wants to learn. And that will come back and bite you, because going into a division is overwhelming. So again, I felt I had a pretty good handle on psychiatric services and substance use whenever I did their budget. But coming into the world and the division, there's so much to learn. So like I said, I learned to this day. It's that massive. It's ever changing. So yes, careful what you wish for. You definitely don't want to be bored. You want excitement. And I definitely have no boredom and excitement.
That's right. And ultimately, you got promoted up after Lori retired. And there's another great someone to train for. Lori Eppel was always fun to kind of, she could be really direct and forceful on things. But also, on the other hand, she was very gracious and willing to do things if it, you know, those things were positive and warranted investment. She was always open to those. And so you ended up out there, and then 2012, and then there was a little brief interim of someone else, and then you ultimately became the DBH kind of director of all things admin. And I'm trying to think, Chelsea, when did you come on? So Vicki started in the division in 2012, and then kind of working her way up, and then you started with the council when?
So I started with the council in February of 16. So
February of 16. So yep. Schulmeyer's always been a part of your life with the department.
She has. Yep. Yep. I honestly think, you know, she did some of my training, maybe.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And that's cool. I love it. So I wrote a list down because, you know, as I came out into the council, it feels like just things kind of, for like a variety of reasons, things kind of have exploded in a positive way. And, you know, we kind of been working on healthcare home and DM 3700, some innovative programs that Dr. Parks and Keith Schaefer and others kind of had pushed on. And then, you know, because I think of a few reasons, one, you know, the state's political world was not like wanting to add a bunch of state staff. And yet also mental health was kind of became popular, is a word I might say, or at least the stigma started reducing and people started understanding. You know, we had the opioid epidemic, we had the governors investing in mental health because of, you know, unfortunately, because of school shootings and different things happening in the national media. And all of a sudden, you know, folks are like, we need to do better, we need to invest more in our mental health system. And so stuff just kind of, I mean, it's just, I got this list here. Just, we'll go through it a little bit and talk about it. But you've been a part of all these things, and we're so grateful for it. But I wrote down some of them. So we had C-Star transformation. These aren't in any order, but, you know, that was no big deal. It's just an entire redesign of our SUD system and how we pay for it and how it kind of impacts allocations. And if I remember right, we kind of were rolling on that because we didn't have a ton of bandwidth. And then we kind of said, oh yeah, Vicki, do you need to know about any of this since it changes everything? And then you had to say, yeah, maybe I should get up to speed on this one. But that was a huge lift for you guys.
It was. And you're right. The council did take the lead on that one because the state staff didn't have the bandwidth. So it was nice having your employees along with some of the provider network really run it to ground and then loop us in. And yeah, we had to, you're changing the way staffing is done. You're changing all of the codes and the team-based rate versus outpatient rate. So, and you have to get an actuarial sound and, you know, entity to come in and help you with all that. So it was definitely a lift for all parties.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah. And then this little CCVHC thing that we've been working on for, you know, my entire career at the council, no joke. But then, you know, I'll never forget that initial CVS Michael up on the board describing this wonderful CVS system and the payment system for the PPS. And then, you know, then we kind of, it didn't get to where we had to do plan B, which was just this interim thing. And then the CVS is back, and then MCOs are in and MCOs are out, and now we're in a wrap. And I mean, this has been a massive part of our lives. And, you know, to think about actually getting folks paid, it's not perfect, but getting folks paid in a really complex system, that was a big lift too. And a lot of gray hairs for me, I know.
Yeah, for sure. And I for one, and I'm going to speak for me, and then I'm going to speak for you too. Sorry. But I have fantastic staff who can really dig in and really understand the technicality of the services that the providers bill and what that looks like, and to work with our IT department to create such systems, and then to have the ability to reach out to your staff who, you know, can be experts on some said procedure code that we need clarification on or we need assistance on, and even going one step further to the providers. I mean, we just have, you know, we have certain individuals that are our go-to because they're just so smart and they know their system. We don't know their system like they know their system. So if we don't work together, we're not building a good system. So really that effort and the ability to talk amongst all networks has proven to really make us successful on some of these initiatives.
Yeah, that's a pretty consistent theme, is the partnership and really listening and respecting each other. And I think across the country, that's not always the case, which is really unfortunate, because, you know, you can get to where you need to get to. And I tell people this all the time. I mean, as a taxpayer, I mean, no offense to our folks, but like, as a taxpayer, you have to have some guardrails in there just to make sure things are accountable. And if people understand that, then you can get to a good place. But yeah, really good partnership. And that's a great point. And then we have this thing that I know, speaking of gray hairs, this CI request, huh? And then really between that CI request and then think about like the sole source dream. I remember talking to Tim about that when I was at DMH, and to get that across the finish line, along with this CI stuff we're doing, I mean, a couple really big ones there. And I know, Chelsea, you might have some stuff to say, because that took us to a new level of kind of complexity and struggle bus. But also, but again, for an amazing cause. I mean, that's going to, think about that. When you add the local match, that's, you know, for our projects alone, that's close to $200 million in the past few years getting invested in our fiscal environments, which is pretty dang cool.
So I was just going to say, I mean, really all of those things, the sole source especially, it's been a game changer. The CI projects have been a game changer for our providers. I think now that we have a system down and we're able to work through that with Vicky and her team, it's been going really smooth. But wow, you get that investment in our system and it's like, we've never done this before. This is huge. You know, what does that mean? How are we going to do this? How's billing going to work? How are we going to get cash out to providers? And it's just a whole new world, but we've managed it and it's really cool. And seeing those, you know, those grand openings and pictures coming in from those projects has really been truly incredible. So,
yeah. And Vicky, remind me again, like the listener, I assume they understand everything, but sole source is just a really cool way of being able to contract with a provider. And I don't think we ever really thought we'd get there, but we did. And now we got it. And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. So it's a sole source contract with the council, Missouri Behavioral Council. And yeah, you guys are basically leading the way for statewide trainings in regards to behavioral health on both sides of the house, substance use and psychiatric training. There's some other things mingled in, but the main thing is the training. And as far as the CI, that was a big, it was a great thing. Don't get me wrong. But when new money comes in, fiscal always touches it. And you guys with the fiscal background know that fiscal always touches everything. So it is a lift on their plate. So being able to share that lift, I say share loosely because Chelsea handled basically all of it. I just get the invoice and send it on for payment, but she handled the big lift to ensure the documentation was there, the match was there, that whatever was needed from the provider network was sufficient and ready to be sent to the state. So definitely grateful for.
Yeah, Chelsea loves it when I say, yeah, we're going to ask for more money this year. And she loves that. You know, again, it's great for the system, but also there's a little tear forms in her eye and drops to the desk. And I'm like, I know, I'm so sorry, Chelsea.
And you mentioning just the viewpoint of, you know, every new investment, everything we do, fiscal touches it. Rochelle and I just had this conversation the other day because, You know, it's like everything we do here at the council, training or program rise, there's a data component and an event and training component. And, you know, we often think of all of those things that go to get a program going or get a training set up or start a new event. But a lot of people don't realize the fiscal impact that has, and that somebody has to be managing it, monitoring it, budgeting for it, paying bills for, you know, all of those things that go into it. So it really is a unique place we sit on that side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, let's just keep going then. So you mentioned conference trainings. Those have just kind of exploded. And, you know, we started out with just when I started a little bitty one annual conference, and now it's just kind of become this significant partnership between the state and the council, and how we really touch a lot of different areas with our training and conference stuff. And Katie and her team do a great job with that. But then here's some other programs. Let's just list a few more. 988 pops up. CBHLs pop up. Our crisis centers pop up. I mean, just like you said, all this new programming and these new things, just all of it takes time to figure out. You know, it seems like there's a million questions with each of these programs, and so much of it touches fiscal, about how you pay for these things, how you get these services ramped up. Remember 988 came, I think we had like 18 months, and everybody's like, oh, that, you know, we got time. And no, you don't have time at all. And we had to figure out a ton of stuff in that space.
There's a lot to figure out. And yeah, especially with being a CCBHO state, how does that look like with a cost report? Is that a brand new program, or can we be inclusive in the cost reporting for their PPS rate? So there's a lot of things to consider. Federal regulations to ensure we're abiding by, state regulations to ensure we're abiding by. And I always tease policy staff saying, oh, they just want to do it because, and that's their job. They want to do it because that's what's right and it makes the most sense. And we're the bad people over here going, no, you can't do it. And here's the reason why. And so to explain to a policy person a fiscal reason is a challenge in itself.
Yeah.
It's like them explaining policy to, it's a challenge.
Yeah. I think Chelsea would say ditto to that one. It's a constant understanding, and I'm even guilty of it, and I'm a fiscal guy, but I think sometimes Fort Chelsea suffers because of that. I'm just like, oh, I think in my brain that works, I'll tell her later, and then she's like, hey, what the hell are we doing with this, you know? That may not work like you think. And I'm like, oh, sure, yeah. But it is a struggle for sure. And always remember, keep fiscal involved. And then I love this one, and you know, I'm not going to get into it with too much detail because I don't want to get you in trouble in any way. But like, you had an incredible rate idea that was related to kind of our non-CCBHC who really got left behind in a lot of ways. And you had a rate idea that just was miraculous and one of the best ideas I'd ever heard of, and really brought some amazing kind of, along with ASAM transformation, but in that interim space, really, really helped out a great deal. And so I want to make sure and raise that one up. Our system owes you a ton for that. And then another one that just small thing was COVID. You know, that thing could have been just disastrous for us. And we had a order that we couldn't just make direct payments to providers. And so as we waited for those federal payments to come in and the world shut down and you can't make just direct payments to providers, okay, what's going to happen here? I remember definitely thinking, you know, we've got some real risk here. And there was a lot of scared people. And I think we had, and then you can't work together, so you're all from home. And we had just regular meetings. We had, you know, just nonstop communication. I mean, it, you know, to think back on it now, it seems like it was just smooth, but man, it was scary for our folks. And to have DMH still be there and make sure that we were all doing everything we could until some of those provider payments started coming in that helped give us some relief. But that was a scary time for us. And I think having the department there and the leadership of you and others, I know, it really helped get us through that. But it's kind of seems like forever ago now, doesn't it, Vicki? But it was just,
I mean,
5 years ago.
It really does. It's like, it feels like yesterday, but when you stop and think about it, it's almost 5 years ago. And I remember we were all sent home, and I know it's a little bit different across each, you know, provider network and entity, but we were pretty, for the most part, sent home, and we were on the phone all day. We have inpatient facilities, so that was a bulk of the conversations, how to ensure they were safe, quarantined, what have you. Then we have the providers, how do we ensure that they can do business as needed? That's when we did telehealth more than what we ever had before, and found that it worked. We found so much stuff worked during COVID. So we would spend, and I'm not exaggerating, 8 o'clock till 5 o'clock, I would be in meetings related to COVID. And then at night or early in the morning is when, you know, you get the rest of your work done, because you're day focused on what do we need to do to ensure people are safe, getting the services they need. The PPE was a whole nother world that we lived in, and it was true coordination between the state, the council, the providers. And the council, you know, you guys even went outside of your network. So you were looking at any contracted DBH provider that needed any type of PPE or any, you know, we could list many of these things that you guys coordinated with outside contracted providers who are outside of your network. So that coordination made a huge difference in us being successful as a state.
Yeah, it was an all hands on deck kind of deal, and everybody was trying to help each other. And we learned a lot, and I think we're going to focus an episode perhaps later on that response, because it really deserves it. It was an amazing time. But having you there, Vicki, and I mean, golly, we had just wild stuff. I remember a meeting with Dan Hogg to talk about, do we rebase during a pandemic? That doesn't make much sense. And how do we get that? You know, how do we figure all that out? We just had a ton of stuff, and just wild to think back about those times. But yeah, you're right. We had just a ton of different things, and technology really, you know, it just kind of amazing. So then that really, that COVID really kind of changed the training agreement in a way where a lot of stuff we had to think through how to get that stuff out and how we could, you know, make sure that was efficient. And the training agreement kind of became one of those ways we could do it, where we have an agreement with five of our bigger CCBHCs to kind of be able to provide these things. And then the council kind of coordinates that with them and make sure that gets invoiced. But it's a bunch of different areas. But so in that training agreement, I know that's a big part of your world, Chelsea and Vicki. So, you know, it started out kind of small and focused, and it was really around that Relias contract. It was originally CMT, but Relias around that pharmacy data mining contract. That was all it was at first. And then, you know, realized, oh, we could do some other things in that with training, et cetera. But that thing has, it became kind of its own beast, didn't it? What are some of your memories, or what are the things that caused you just maybe the most heartburn, or also like what a great idea we were able to get something going out of that, using that? Anything you can share? Or is it all too much cussing?
I don't think there's anything I can't share. I think, like I said earlier, the biggest thing is that it went from maybe more isolated focus as far as the training agreement went. You know, as far as what we did as a state, it was a little bit more narrow focus. And COVID really opened it up. Let's touch all DBH contracted providers. You know, you guys really took on being the entity who's going to provide XYZ training for all the providers. But I would think that my biggest thing I would be saying was give me the most heartburn would be the size of the contract. I mean, I don't even want to say it tripled. It's like 10 times as big as what it used to be, just because of all the efforts, all the funding streams that came down from the federal level. And how do we get that money out the door quickly? And you guys were a way for us to get the money out the door for testing, mitigation, PPE, trainings. So it was just, it was time that that came to be a single feasible source because it was, it just, the umbrella just opened with it.
Yeah. And Chelsea, that's a huge part of your world every single month.
It is. Yeah. And I will say one thing, one kind of standout item to me is the fact that we've been able to kind of build our CVent contract, at least a portion of it, into the training agreement, because without that and our it's our registration system for all of these trainings that have been moved virtual. And, you know, we're up to double digits on large scale events that we're doing in partnership with DMH. And so without having that registration system to allow us to do all of these various trainings and events, it would have been a lot rockier than, you know, it was. And so just like you said, Vicky, we learned a lot, and building some of those things in have been just a massive game changer for how we can successfully maneuver and get these things out the door and get those funding streams spent. It's a lot of different buckets that we track to make sure everything's where it needs to be. And sometimes we mess it up, but we go in and we fix it and get it all taken care of.
Yeah. You accountants talk about like a chart of accounts, or there's different QuickBook terminology for it. But when I first started, we had like really like two. I mean, we had the one little agreement with the state for the Relia stuff. And then we had one little agreement, if I remember right, for kind of Rochelle's position as it related to DM and healthcare home and that kind of stuff. And then other than that, I mean, that was, and then dues. That was it. You know, we just had a very small budget of four people. And, you know, now when you think about all the different things that we have done with the help of DMH, it's all been above the board and trying to really think about what we need and where we can help and partner. It's amazing. Now, I don't know what our chart of accounts or whatever you call it looks like, but it's way more.
I was going to say, Brent, you know, I first started in 2016. Our chart of accounts on the expense side, we had, I think, four or five different grants, and all of those grants were directly through the council, through, you know, those private entities. And they were all related to CCBHC, CCBHC planning, CCBHC, you know, they were all related to CCBHC in one way or another. We have one grant now. It's for SIM mapping. Other than that, everything runs through the training agreement. So just that shift alone on our books has been huge. You know, we're no longer, all of our grants are built in on the state side and running through that agreement versus on our book. So it's just wild. That's something that we've kind of watched over the years really, really shift.
Yeah. And then anyone who's trying to build our reverse system and picking out from that dang drop down menu of where an expense should go, it's like a nightmare. And that's okay. But, you know, that's what keeps Chelsea working all the time. It's like, and just trying to figure out where these buckets are and how things get, it's never ends. And then the last one, there's a ton more I could talk about. But the last one I love so much was the mother of all spreadsheets. We called it that because, I mean, anyone who's listened to this who's in the state system knows we've got a complicated system. And there's a variety of reasons for that. A lot of our folks don't like it. We still think we can simplify it. But, you know, we've grown this thing based on a lot of thinking that was pre-EHR days. But, we have to be accountable to the legislature, how they appropriate the money. So we have different appropriations, and then we have different payer plans and all these different levels of spending and all this. And it's complicated as you know what. And trying to make sure we understand it is really important. And so, you know, during COVID, when we were really thinking what we were going to do and how these different things were, all the balls were being juggled. And we just sat down, a bunch of us, and said, you know, we really need to get this all on a spreadsheet that we can understand. And Medicaid expansion was happening too, like, you know, complicate things further. And folks were wanting to come after our money if we were going to use unmatched dollars for that. What would that look like? I mean, it was scary as you know what. And so I'd love to be able to show people, or it's hard to describe the mother of all spreadsheets. I mean, we kind of called it that in jest, but the name stuck. But it became that thing. But what do you remember about that, Vicky? It's like kind of this, really, in a way, It was a great project because it really helped us all understand better where we all thought our position was fiscally and where all those buckets were. And I think, Vicky, I'll be honest, really produced a lot of good for the system because we used that, didn't we, as I recall, to kind of do some advocacy around don't take so much money.
Yeah, we did. We definitely, on the SUD side, as far as Medicaid expansion, expected a high population to come in under, once we became an expansion state, to come in under what I call the AEG. So yeah, that made a big difference in how we advocate to keep that funding in our budget. I mean, honestly, we weren't allowed to keep all of it. And realistically, we couldn't expect to keep all of it. But I think the reduction that we took could have been worse. And that spreadsheet really put into perspective what providers looked like as a whole. You know, when we allocate, we have tidbits of information here and there, and we still have to keep, you know, psychiatric services funding separate from SUD services because of our federal requirements. And when we did, you know, the mother spreadsheet, we just threw them all together. So it was that rare instance where we had all of the funding, substance use and psychiatric services, the appropriations all together, the grants all together, then the allocations, and kind of see what did our system look like as a whole. So it was really an eye-opener to see that in one spreadsheet. And the spreadsheet is massive and multiple. But if you're a spreadsheet nerd like most of us on the call, then it was like heaven and you couldn't wait to get into it and put your spin on it. I know when my staff look at that, because they weren't involved when we did it originally. We're resurrecting the mother sheet. So when we did it originally, I was like in heaven going, oh, I can do this and we'll do that. And they're looking at the spreadsheet going, what the heck did you guys even do? What does this mean? What does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was a great piece of work. Like you said. Yeah. And the spreadsheet nerd, I love that because Chelsea and I, this is a funny story. Like, I'll let Chelsea talk about her nerdness. She can do really amazing things with like pivot table craft that I'm so jealous about. But anyway, like Vicky, you know this, like Nora will say something like, hey, give me a document that explains this. And I'm always like, it's all right there in the damn spreadsheet. What do you need? But she wants that Word document. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's all right there. You really want to? Yes, I really want a Word document. Okay. Well, it's all right in that spreadsheet. Because our brains are like, oh, I love that. That, in fact, you can give me a Word document. I need that damn spreadsheet because that's what I need. Yeah. To understand what you're talking about. And the policy side folks often want that Word document. But yeah, Chelsea, we love that spreadsheet day. I think that was kind of, we totally geeked out on that thing too.
Yeah, it's like, if I'm having a bad day, just give me a spreadsheet project to work on. Let me pick that up and see if it can improve my mood a little bit.
Yeah. Sure. Give me a spreadsheet. All right. So Vicky, let's talk now. This is the sad part of the pod. You've got a pending date coming up sometime in this year of 2025, where you, since you did start work at 16, that you're retiring now at 40. But I know I've just a little bit on that. You might be just a little older than that, but you've got like this new grandbaby and you've got this opportunity to actually retire. Is that true?
That is true. So I'm old enough that I came to work for the state under the 80 and out program. So your years of service plus your age have to equal 80 and you're eligible for retirement. So I am going to be to that point towards the end of 2025. And so I am tossing around the idea of taking some leave before that and potentially leaving the summer of 2025.
Yeah.
So, yeah, super excited. Would love to spend a little bit more time with the grandson. He's just a joy. And I got weddings now. My oldest is engaged. So there's a wedding in spring of 2026. So I think there's lots of things to keep me busy.
Yeah, this makes Chelsea and I super, super sad. We've had such a good time working with you, both when I was at DMH and then when I came over here, and just knowing that you have someone that will listen to you suffer you when you're acting like an idiot or get all mad, give it back to you. Just someone who you can be honest with and meet and know exactly what you're getting and trust that what you say is what you mean. And we just can kind of get things moving if they need to get kicked in the pants. And it's just unbelievable. But on the flip side, we each have really good teams that we've included in our work together and have brought along to kind of understand the process. So I know on my side, you know, if I leave tomorrow, I trust Chelsea and Rochelle and the rest of that team will pick up and go. And you've got some good ones on your side too, that I know when you do leave, you got Amy and Kate and others. So we'll still be in good hands, but we'll miss you so much, Vicki. It makes us sad.
I think I'm going to miss it a little too. It's going to be definitely an adjustment. But you're, like you said, Brent, you got good teams. You're only as good as your team. And my team, along with yours, are just fantastic. And they're the ones that make the day-to-day operations go smoothly. And so, yes, definitely good teams. And we'll miss the relationships I have. I've already invited myself to your grand opening of your new building. So like you're going to invite myself places.
Yeah, you're always welcome to invite yourself for sure. We probably should really make a little note to get you there and make sure you know about our holiday social and get you there too. And I know folks will definitely have an opportunity to say our goodbyes, but you're always welcome to continue to join us. And Chelsea, I know we need to get you on record too. These podcasts, you know, they live forever. I don't think they ever go away. So, you know, 20 years from now, someone's going to be listening to this and saying, I wonder what Chelsea felt of Vicki. And now we're going to be able to answer it, won't we?
Yeah. It's been a huge highlight for me personally working with Vicki. Like I joked earlier, I mean, she did part of my training. When I took over this role at the council, I came in kind of with some spreadsheets I didn't understand and a lot of going on. And, you know, we had that training agreement that was this tiny little beast and now it was huge. So, you know, we kind of alluded to it earlier with COVID. Our jobs both have drastically changed over the last 5 years. And I feel like our teams have grown together on that. I will for sure miss right now when I get asked, whether it's a staff person here at the council or, you know, even a provider, I always say, well, let's ask Vicki. So I'll definitely miss that. Usually, you know, together we can come up with a good plan. And I appreciate that relationship so much. Our training has really, really grown. And the list goes on of all the things we've done together over the years. But it's been a fun, magical ride getting to do that together and bringing kind of our system into this new era of telehealth and supplies and just things I never thought we'd be purchasing through the training agreement. So it's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, really, Vicki knows this because she's been around and I know she shares this, but, you know, we know a lot of people in a lot of different roles. And ultimately, everything we do is designed to make that interaction between our providers and the folks they serve better. Whether that makes more access or makes that access better through better training or makes that access better, that interaction better because the physical space is more trauma informed, whatever it might be, that's our goal, is to make sure that happens better and more often and when it's needed. And so, but to make that happen, and we're so proud of all the folks that do that, but what makes that happen is folks like Vicki and Chelsea and our teams, and it takes a lot of work to make that interaction better and happen more often. And so the folks that do the stuff we do that are on this pod right now, sometimes they don't quite understand that. And it's really important on us that we take time to say thank you to people like Vicki and to say thank you to our teams and make sure they understand that they have an important role in making that happen. And that's what we do all the time. And hope folks understand that and how important that is. I know I do. And I'm grateful to you, Vicki, for folks that are listening that maybe are like, that was a lot of fiscal stuff. Well, you bet it is, because like I said, no money, no mission. And you've been incredible help to us and to those we serve, Vicki. And I really want to say thank you.
You're welcome. And I would add to that, Brent, because you're spot on. I think the jobs we do fiscally are hard. You know, you have to be the bad person or the good person, depending on the day or the ask. And, you know, administratively, you don't have the ability to go out and about and see what you do, how it affects people. So I'm always a big advocate to encourage my team to go out. And if there's an open house at a new, for instance, behavioral health crisis center, go see it. It puts life in perspective of why you're here day after day, stressed day after day. This is why you do it, you know, to serve your neighbors. And so it definitely, the work is hard, but the work is also rewarding. You get to go out and see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was great. I appreciate you taking a little time, Vicki, pausing during this very busy time for you. I appreciate you taking a little time to join us on our podcast, Show Me State of Mind. And so we appreciate you and wish you the best. And with that, we'll sign off on today's episode. So thanks again, Vicki.
Thank you.